Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast, the only rugby podcast in which we are still talking about Ireland's 62-12 win over Russia from the 2011 World Cup, in which that's current news and that's a new exciting thing that we want to chat about, we want to talk all about.
Is that a challenge to other rugby podcasts?
It is.
If anyone else listening has a rugby podcast, or a film podcast, even better.
But even better, yeah.
Preferably a film podcast.
This is
actually
a film podcast.
In fact,
yeah, Mark Kermode.
In fact, no, forget about rugby podcasts. We're the only film podcast that's talking about Ireland 62,
this
Russia
is the thing.
12.
Whenever I've listened to Kermode and Mayo, they never talk about Ireland's win over Russia.
Really?
It's like they're really afraid to. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I don't know why. I don't know what it is. I don't know why they won't accept this challenge.
Yeah.
Like, every time I've turned up at Mark Kermode's house, and I've said to him, hey, Marky Mark, can you please? I don't know why Mark Wahlberg's there now. Both of them are there. They're just lying together.
Asking what he thinks of Fergus McFadden, you know?
Exactly. I want to know about Shane Jennings. You know, I want to know what Mark Kermode thinks of Shane Jennings.
Yeah, but you get nothing back, I presume.
He never replies. He never said anything.
No.
So he's called the police, even.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've got a restraining order.
I'm going
to have to start going
Stings come round your house.
Thank you. I'm going to have to go to Simon Mayo's house instead. It's going to be a nightmare.
Right, yeah, that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
But, you know, if anyone has a film podcast, which statistically, at least a third of our listeners do,
sure,
because they're all human beings.
Yeah, if they're male, chances are they have a podcast.
So 99% of people have a podcast. And let's say a third of all podcasts have something to do with films.
Sure.
So a third of you have film podcasts that should be mentioning Ireland against Russia from 2011.
That is, of course, the game we're going to be talking about today.
Oh, is it?
Just as Chris Hewitt doesn't on the Empire podcast. So we are going to talk about that rugby match. This was... by the way, I'm Robbie or Squidge or whatever, and you are?
I'm Will Owen.
Great, fantastic, wonderful. We have talked about the game a record amount for the opening few minutes.
We have, haven't we?
It's remarkable. So this was, as I say, Ireland's third game of the World Cup. They were coming into this off the back of course, beating Australia to... good as take the pool, you know. It meant they only had to get a solid result against Italy.
Yeah.
And they had to not somehow lose to a Russia team that were frankly just happy to be there.
Have, of course, statistically... they're always going to finish third in every Rugby World Cup. But it's every single Rugby World Cup they've always come third in the pool, haven't they?
Yeah.
Like, and that's a genuine statistic that every time they come third.
The one exception is 99, where they had that weird system where the pools were all split up differently. So wasn't a... you know, it was like it was all over the place.
Okay, so but they came like two and a half.
Yeah, technically we just ignore 99 because it was weird.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only time Ireland haven't gone out in the quarterfinals because he went out in the quarterfinal playoff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They still lost to Argentina, so it's still in spirit. 99 is like a weird exception you have to ignore on everything except like Australia were really good and like Wales lost to Samoa, but they didn't play the whole of Samoa. So, all of the usual jokes. So Ireland, they do ring the changes to look at the teams.
Yes,
but
they do.
Not as much as Declan Kidney said in the week he wanted to make more changes, but he had a number of injuries.
Yeah.
He had a number of sort of lots of players with knocks, like Tommy Bowe, Paul O'Connell, a lot of players that had played against Australia picked up knocks in that game. And knots. They'd been at a scout camp afterwards.
Yeah.
And they'd just
been
collecting everything
well.
Around. Yeah, yeah. Martin Gillingham was
proud.
There just picking
man.
Them up. Yeah.
I hate this.
So a few players like Rob Carney, Keith Earls, who'd played in that previous game, had to double up and play in this one.
And then you get certain players like Paddy Wallace is just thrown in. Like, oh yeah, he went to the World Cup.
So Paddy Wallace, this was his third World Cup.
What?
However, his third World Cup. However, he up until this point had only played 7 minutes.
What?
So 2003, he was called up and didn't play a single minute.
Right.
2003, he came off the bench against Namibia and that was it.
Right.
Against Russia, this is his first start in a World Cup.
Right.
This is his third time of asking. Pretty much, yeah. He's certainly playing in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It's also, like, on the flip side of that, I was thinking about that, like, looking at Sean Cronin throwing in the first few minutes, thinking, like, oh, wow, this is the same Sean Cronin who got his first Six Nations start, like, a year ago.
Yeah, Sean Cronin had just signed for Leinster at this point.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
This is, like, you know, formerly Connacht's best player.
No, yeah. Because I can remember him breaking through into the team, and because they kicked out Joe Flannery, hadn't they?
He just got injured.
Right, okay.
So David Varley has been called up, and he just arrived like the day before this game.
Oh, of course, because they had a complete crisis at hooker, didn't they?
Yeah.
Because Mike Sherry made it into the squad, did not, like, eventually. Because like, they were really scraping the barrel with hookers eventually. But yeah, no, I remember really liking that they brought in Rory Best, who, you know, was an established player. Mm. And then Sean Cronin, like, yeah, Connacht represent. But yeah, fair play Sean Cronin, starting World Cup games long before he got a taste of that in Six Nations.
They made him play the full 80 so that Rory Best could have a rest.
Yeah.
You know, a best rest.
Bory rest.
Yeah, so I mentioned Sean Cronin as well. So it's interesting. I don't know if you watched the version of the game on YouTube.
Yes, I did, yes. Yeah.
Did you watch the first 10 minutes where they've got the kind of pre-coverage of the game?
No, not really. I kind of glanced over that.
So they have this Kiwi guy introducing it, just talking over the footage.
Mm-hmm.
And he has no idea what he's talking about.
Go on.
I think he's heard of the countries of Ireland and Russia, and that is the extent of his knowledge. So he begins awkwardly reading off the team sheet, and I think he mispronounces every single player's name. So he says, when he's initially beginning to go through the Irish team, starting at the front row, he says, Kyan Healy and Sean Cronin.
Sean Cronin,
who he says, both of the Leicester club.
Oh, no.
Yep, he says, the Leicester club, right? And you kind of think, okay, you know, okay, fine, he slipped up there once. Yeah. We've all made that mistake, you know.
Sure.
I can only imagine how many times it was made in the 2009 Heineken Cup final when they played each other.
Yeah.
All of that.
I can't wait till he gets onto Donegal O'Callaghan.
He actually pronounces the Donegal's right.
Really?
Like, it's clear he's done his research, you know. He's been looking over that carefully. He then gets into the back row and he says, Sean O'Brien and Jamie Heaslip, both also of the Leicester club.
You know what? It's funny, though, because Grant Nisbett didn't get Jamie Heaslip's name right, and this guy did.
Yes.
So he's not Rodney Heaslip this time round.
Of course not.
So this guy's doing pretty well, I think.
However, I need to draw your attention to my favourite bit, where he really starts bullshitting.
Right.
Because he clearly looks at the teams, goes, right, who do I know? Ronan O'Gar, I've heard of that guy. Where do I know that name? You know, he's played a lot for Ireland, he must have done. And so he makes up what his own analysis on Ronan O'Gara.
Oh, no.
Okay?
Okay.
And I need you to hear this.
From the Leicester club, and with 43 tests, a ton of experience. To the halves we go. O'Gara is one man you need to keep your eye on. Of course, he's very, very quick, Ronan O'Gara, playing in his 113th, in fact, 115th test.
So, yeah, he's clearly picked up and gone, good player, Ronan O'Gara. You know, we can agree.
Yeah.
Ronan O'Gara,
yeah,
good at rugby.
Yes.
And he's picked that up from somewhere because, let's face it, he is the standout name in this team sheet.
Yeah.
You know,
he's the most experienced man.
Heaslip and Healy obviously go on to become, you know,
yeah.
I guess Heaslip mostly is by this point.
Rob Carney, you know.
Yeah, sure. Carney and O'Brien, obviously. But O'Gara, circa 2011, is the standout name in this squad. So, you know, it makes sense that a New Zealander looks at that team sheet and goes, oh, yeah, he's the one I heard of. He's the one I know. Good attacking threat, probably, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
he's gone. Yeah, sure, he's very, very quick.
Yeah.
Great. Ronan O'Gara was many things, but he was not quick. Never mind very, very quick.
All respect to him, you know.
Yeah.
Great player.
And it's interesting, because you then watch the game, and Ronan O'Gara is doing everything to get around the fact that he is very, very slow but has to play attacking rugby.
Yeah.
Like, it's constant cross kicks.
There are a couple of instances, though, where O'Gara, and Sexton has the same thing when he comes on, where O'Gara thinks, like, this is the one game where I might score a try. And there's a couple of times where he carries the ball in when he gets close to the line. And I was kind of, like, rooting for him and thinking, like, oh, come on. Like, you don't get to see Rog score that many tries. Certainly at this point, you know, maybe when he's a bit younger, he's got a few more tries for Ireland. And Sexton, when he comes on, starts just being a twat and just thinking, like, I need to score against these pesky, you know, Russians.
He's full on fuming Sexton rage, isn't he? Like,
yeah.
Every time he comes off the bench, he looks furious.
Sure. And for the record, we'll keep our chat about Jonathan Sexton to this little bubble so it doesn't dominate talking too much on this podcast about. Because, you know, Jonathan Sexton can often dominate discourse surrounding a match. But, you know, Jonathan Sexton came on, was fuming, was fine for a shit pass, and that was kind of his game.
Jonathan Sexton can dominate just like he hasn't for several years.
Yeah.
Since he was World Player of the Year, deservedly so.
Yeah, absolutely.
And instantly he dropped off a cliff and was fuming about it.
Anyway, that's all I have to tell Sexton.
Yeah.
He was bad.
The one other weird thing that guy says as he's introducing the game is, having ran through both teams, and as I say, kind of made it up, you know, like, the only player he's got any idea who they are on the Russia team is Adam Burns.
Of course, who Super Rugby.
Yeah, and he tells a story about his mum, or him knowing his mum had connections to Russia, and he tells it really badly, like he's sort of struggling over, and he at one point just... He clearly is looking at the name of the town his grandmother's from.
Right.
And he just says it in the middle of a sentence. He's just kind of going, yeah, I can't remember the name of the town, so let's just say Moscow as the as a city in
placeholder.
Russia.
Yeah.
So he's just kind of reading out these stats. He's saying, so Adam Burns, of course, spoke to his mother, knowing his grandmother, Moscow, was born in Russia. He just kind of, he's kind of umming and ahhing more, and he's not quite sure what he's saying, and he just throws the word in the wrong place.
Fair play. That's a good way to distribute your knowledge of a person.
He then, and I was quite excited because I thought we were going to get to listen to this guy all game.
Yeah.
He then says, and I wrote this down word for word verbatim, "Let's go to our wonderfully professional international commentators, Simon Ward and Alan Quinlan."
Who, again, he's probably heard of for the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Ago.
Yeah. A wonderfully professional. As in, they've done their research. They're not looking at the TV for the first time right now.
Sure, sure. And, you know, Alan Quinlan sounds like an Irish name. He's probably played with a lot of them.
Yeah.
Which he has.
He has. So. It's a great example of my eternal theory in Alan Quinlan, which is that he's a great commentator, but he isn't talking about Munster or Ireland.
Yes, yes. And this was sort of his first gig as a commentator, was this World Cup, wasn't it? And I can remember him coming through and thinking, like, oh, his analysis is actually really good.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's fine watching a game like this where it's kind of expected that he should be biased to Ireland.
Yes.
Because that's who we're all mostly watching.
My favourite moment of Quinlan in this game is at one point he says, Ireland look furious with Russia. You know, they've really... Cork accent. Yeah, they look furious. Russia really wound them up. They look really, really angry. Full credit to Russia for that. And because that was his job, you know, and he just keeps praising Russia for how annoyed all of Ireland look with them.
Yeah, yeah, a few more high tackles would suffice at this point. Yeah, no, fair play. And to be fair, I know exactly what point in the game you're referring to, because there's that point where Russia sort of get back into it, which I suppose we'll probably get onto later on in this, but yeah, and Ireland do completely lose their heads for a little bit, for like a 10, 15 minute period, but... Yeah.
Speaking of losing their heads, A, Russia make a lot of high tackles.
Sure.
And B, they start the game in quite a, shall we say, bold manner.
Sure. The first thing I notice about this game is that the touch judge on the far side from where the camera is Jerome Garces, who's like really young and has like Beatles hair. And like he looks so different from like 2015.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think, oh wow, he was young and not that good once.
It's like... Sorry, so there's a Beatles-era Jerome Garces?
Yeah.
There's a Jerome... Okay. This information is going to take a lot of processing.
Yeah.
Because I never had... Okay, you're going to need to give me a minute to process this image of just like a cross between Ringo Starr and Jerome Garces.
That's literally what it is, yeah. And also, like... refereeing has aged Jerome Garces quite significantly. Like... He looks good in 2011. Like he's you know, a pretty fresh-faced young man. He's done pretty well for himself, but no.
I remember watching that interview of him before the World Cup final last year.
Yeah.
And how old he suddenly looked when they showed, because they threw to like a clip of him in 2015 refereeing his first World Cup match or whatever. And going, man, he's aged. And I didn't really notice it at the time, but in 4 years?
Yeah. Mate, look at how much he is in 8 years. You'd be surprised.
Because he suddenly looks like quite an elder statesman, like very classy French bloke. Whereas in 2015, he looked, I hate to say it, normal.
Should we move on to the game? Because you were about to make a point about how the game started.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, Ireland do that thing that all Tier 1 nations do early on, where they kick a penalty to show respect.
Yeah.
They show like, well, yeah, we're taking this game seriously. We're going to kick a penalty.
Loves it. Yeah.
And then from there on out, they just chuck about the ball randomly. Like, Ireland throw like a record number of forward passes in this game.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Every pass seems to drift forward.
Yeah, yeah. And they got away with 99%.
Yeah, quite a lot of them they get away with. But Jamie Heaser throws like five forward passes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like, it's weird because like there was a point where Jamie Heaster gets the ball in a slightly broken field where he sort of stood in the centre channel and he passes the ball. And I was thinking, like, wait, is that Jamie Heaster passing? Because normally that's the situation where that's Jamie Heaster's bread and butter to carry in that situation. And he passes the ball and it looks like throughout this game, because like he's playing a bit more of a distributor role than he ever would normally when he's playing for Leinster or whatever, or, you know, in a big Irish test match, not to discredit this, but like obviously given the scoreline, you know, in a close test match, I should say. And it looks like he doesn't know how to distribute, because like all of his passes end up drifting forward or being a bit too high or whatever. None of them go to ground or anything, or none of them are penalised as forward passes. They don't get dropped or anything like that. But it looks like he's so uncomfortable playing this new role that he's given himself.
But he was in that sort of era of 2010-11 when he was, I think, it was the best form of his career.
Yeah.
When he played for Leinster and then for Ireland as well. He did pass more and he did distribute more. And he was, as well as being a dynamic carrier.
His skills are very underrated. Yeah.
And you always think of him as being like quite quick.
A good lineup forward as well.
Yeah.
Also, while we're here, I spoke to you about this yesterday, and I have to credit my friend Allard for pointing this out to me. However, Matt Berninger, who is the lead singer of The National, released an album last Friday, and there's one track on it where the gang backing vocals are done by Jamie Heaslip and Sean O'Brien.
What did Donica Ryan do in this game to not qualify
as the one
of Ireland back row who doesn't do backing vocals?
Yeah, I was like, did he not see Stephen Ferris picking up Will Genia in the previous game?
Honestly, it's almost like Donica Ryan isn't that common a name outside of Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie Heaslip's a really uncommon name.
We should say it's a different one.
Yeah,
like, I assumed it was the same one. I assumed he must be a secret Leinster fan or something.
Yeah, which, you know, like Matt Bernier, if you're listening, you know, tell us which Irish province you'd support. But
it's Leinster, we know that.
Yeah, unless it's the Connacht Sean O'Brien.
Good point. Or the other Sean O'Brien that played for the under-20s.
Yeah, exactly. But Jamie Heaslip's a very uncommon name. Also, it's great to see that Jamie Heaslip's finally got a job in audio.
Well,
after a suggestion of podcast.
He's mentioned on a podcast here. That's pretty good going,
Sam. True.
I said this at the time. I've never heard of another person with the surname Heaslip.
No.
What are the chances both of them would be called Jamie?
Rodney, to be fair.
Rodney, fair point. Thank you, Grant. So, yeah, as we say, like, Ireland kicked the penalty. And then there's a really quick yellow card.
Oh, what a yellow card it is. So it starts off that Russia have decent possession, you know, around halfway. And Konstantin Rashkov, the Russian fly half,
he's normally looks a centre.
He's very good at playing both positions, usually. This isn't a good example of that. But he's about to do, I guess, an up and under. Mm. And then he kind of last minute thinks, maybe we could do a chip instead. And he's caught somewhere between the two.
Yeah.
And the ball goes about 15 yards in the air and about 3 yards forward. And it's very confused what that kick wants to be. And so Ireland counterattack. And what happens next, Robbie Owen?
I mean, Ireland do counterattack.
Yeah.
And I'd say it goes pretty well.
Sure, it goes pretty well. But then, what stops it from being perfect?
Konstantin Rashkov.
Konstantin Rashkov himself gets in the way in a creative, maybe slightly cynical, maybe totally fucking illegal manner.
The thing is, though, right, you say about this being a remarkable yellow card. We're skipping ahead a bit.
Okay, come back to this. I know where you're about to go with this. So I'll just finish explaining this and then we'll come on to that. So Konstantin Rashkov goes for what at the time I would have described as one of the most blatant deliberate knock-ons you'll ever see, because I think it's Paddy Wallace is releasing the pass.
Mm.
And Rashkov just like, he basically slaps the ball down as far away as possible and he more or less starts jogging to the sideline before the referee's pulled the yellow card out of his pocket, because he knows that, like, it was like, because a deliberate knock-on, the sort of definition of that has slightly changed, that if you're not actively trying to catch the ball, it's a deliberate knock-on.
Yeah.
Whereas he was deliberately actively trying to knock that ball on as far as possible on that, which I guess is more what the definition was back then. Whereas I think now today's definition is probably more accurate, frankly, because people used to get away with stuff back then, which was cynical. So, yeah, Rashkov more than flails his arm. He fully swings for the ball and sends it flying and thinks, worth the 10 minutes in the bin, and goes straight to the sideline, you know, just as the referee starts to call him over.
Yeah, because I'd just, as this happens, I just began to write something in my notes and I sort of looked up and wasn't quite sure what had just happened. And it wasn't until, you know, I saw the replay, I was like, oh, yeah, that is a yellow card, you know, after thinking, oh, it's a really quick yellow card. I didn't have the moment of hilarity as it came on.
Yeah.
And so instead, I got that moment from a beat towards the end of this half.
Sure. So there was a point where, it's worth again saying, we're recording this in person, we're in the same room for this particular episode. Mm-hmm. We're in the same house. I watched the game earlier today, mm-hmm. you watched it slightly later on. So I was walking upstairs and walked past your room, and I heard you just burst into laughter. And I was just thinking, oh, Denis Antonov just stuck his arm up. Not Denis Antonov, Andrei Gorbazov, sorry.
Yeah, Andrei Gorbazov. Yep, that was exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Right, so Ireland launch, I think, you know, again, a good counterattack, right?
Sure.
And Gorbazov makes a tackle on, I think it's Paddy Wallace again, you know, brings him to ground, but he manages to offload. Ireland then keep going forward, you know, they keep the ball alive until a Russian player, I think it might have been Artemyev, makes the tackle to bring him to ground,
yeah.
And a phase forms. Gorbazov is jogging back into the defensive line as the ball comes out from the scrum half.
Emphasis on jogging.
Yes. Gorbazov is strolling back in the general direction of the defensive line as the ball comes out. And he sees the ball in front of him. It's not going to hit him. You know, it's not like one of those scrum half passes where, no, like Reese Webb does all the time.
Targeted he passes into the offside, yeah, man, yeah.
It's not that. He's not doing that. Gorbazov just goes, you know what? And he punches the ball away, like back towards his own try line.
At full stretch. Like, yeah. He is like so actively trying to illegally kill this Ireland attack. And he slaps the ball. And like, it made Rashkov's yellow card look so mild.
But it's just, I need to emphasise this. Like, it's a man in an offside position.
He's a good 5-7 metres offside.
Yeah. Like, properly, he's basically stood in his left fly half.
Yeah.
And he slaps it so far forward, like, it goes beyond the ruck, it bounces beyond that, like, to roughly where the Russian, like, scrum half fullback cover is.
Yeah.
This is in Russia's own 22.
Yes.
And it goes so badly.
I have so much momentum as well.
It goes so badly that he goes past the cover, bounces past the cover onto the try line where Andrew Trimble follows up and dives on it.
It's phenomenal. Like, you say professional foul. Yeah. It is, in a sense, it's the most professional foul you'll ever see. But it doesn't account for the fact that Andrew Trimble's boot is inches away from the ball, yeah, as it bounces on the floor.
Like, because it's the most cynical bit of play you'll see all World Cup. Yeah. And yet, it doesn't kill the attack. And in fact, it's an assist.
So what happens after this? Because the story's still not finished. It's Craig Joubert calls him over, fuming.
Yes.
Craig Joubert refereeing this game. Calls over Gorbazov and says, he basically says, if not for the fact that that professional foul was so shit that they scored, you would be in the bin. And he says, yeah, to him, you know, I should be sending you off.
His phrase is, and I wrote this down, I'm going to make a game decision.
What does that mean?
I assume it's for the sake of the game. For the good of the game, I'm not going to send you off, because when you were sent down before, you scored two tries and, you know, Ireland, yeah, scored two tries very quickly. so he says, I'm not going to do that.
How's he gotten away with that?
Like, that's not a justification.
No.
There's no way someone should not go to the bin for the most blatant yellow card offence on a try scoring opportunity. The thing is, he turns it into a, like, you know, the thing I say about, like, Ikano Am's pass in the World, yes, Cup final last year, where he turns it from an 80% try to 100%
sure
try. Like, he does that accidentally. He, yeah, turns it from an 80% try to 100% try. Yeah, for the opposition, for Andrew Bloody Trimble, who is a fun stat for you. It'd been 20 tests since Andrew Trimble last scored a try.
Yeah.
20 tests exactly since, yeah, he last, no, scored for Ireland.
But I do understand that a game decision is a thing that exists.
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
you know, changing your perception of the laws based on how the game is going and the momentum of it and which team, whatever. I understand that's a thing. But in this scenario,
yeah,
you send him to the bin.
I remember Wallaby Springboks about a year before this, 2010.
Right.
I want to say it was Peter Fitzgibbon refereeing, if you remember him.
There is no chance Peter Fitzgibbon got that gig.
That's it. Like, in my head, it was him, but I don't think it was. It was a bald Irish guy, you know.
Right.
Like,
okay.
Probably someone else. Who?
Probably Alan Lewis or somebody.
Yeah. It was the game where Drew Mitchell got the two, scores that brilliant juggling try.
Oh, that one. Yeah. Yeah.
But then gets two yellow cards and gets sent off.
Yeah. Is that the same game?
Same game, I think so.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, maybe
it was the same summer, at least.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? So, yeah. Anyway, carry on.
He definitely scored and then got two yellow cards. I think it might not be the juggling
try. Right, okay, yeah. That makes sense.
But yeah, so Drew Mitchell gets his first yellow card. Then the referee calls him over to give his second yellow card. And he says, I cannot be held accountable for the impact this will have on the game. And look, the referee says that.
Yeah.
I cannot be held accountable for the impact of the shot. Yes, you can. You're supposed to be.
Yeah.
It says in the laws, the referee's decision is final.
It's nice that he's trying to have empathy, though. He's like, sure. Sorry, but...
Well, no, he's just saying it's not my fault, mate.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my fault. Don't look at me.
Yeah.
No, I'm looking at you.
Bless.
And I'm also going to look at Drew Mitchell for doing two, you know, yellow card offences.
Sure.
And I'm going to look at Andrei Garbazov at all times, because even in games where Russia aren't playing, I think he could still reach out and slap the ball back.
Yeah. In great moments of shithousery.
Yeah, like, I don't Andrei feel like we've done this justice.
No, we
haven't.
As the
most blatant piece of cheating. Should, as I say, it made me guffaw.
I think we ought to, like, attach a video of this or something.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, on Twitter or something. Just so people can see just how criminal this is. Because, like, we talk about a lot of moments in games and stuff, but this is quite something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One other thing to mention from about that time. So, as Ireland are really pulling away, Simon Ward, the main commentator, says, because he sees a rainbow coming over the horizon because it stopped raining.
Oh, no. Is this going where I think it is?
Do you know what he says? Do you remember?
I didn't hear this.
He says, well, of course, all the Irishmen, he then, like, yeah, pauses and said, this is really clever. We're looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And there's then a moment's silence as Alan Quinlan presumably just looks at him with the face that Mr. Lyons tore for gouging.
Yeah.
And there's this moment's silence. Then he follows up and says, it really is a beautiful rainbow forming right now. And then there's another moment's silence. And Simon Ward says, the pot of gold would, of course, be the World Cup itself. Ireland will be looking forward to a quarterfinal on this date if they can qualify.
I hate this. I was going to ask if the moment's silence was for Simon Ward after he was deceased
so,
by Alan Quinlan.
I wrote this down, right? He says initially the word gold from the phrase pot of gold at 10:46 on the match clock. Alan Quinlan next speaks at 11:38.
Oh, wow.
That's almost a full minute of silence of just, I'm not talking to you, mate.
Wow, that's bad.
As he continues to just dig the hole deeper and deeper and deeper. And it isn't until something starts happening in the game that Alan Quinlan goes, you know, Ireland are going to need to... I'm going to need to develop a Cork accent, and then Ireland are going to need to, you know, to start changing the way they use their runners or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he starts commenting on whatever's happening and whatever's just taken place.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Should we talk about a couple of tries?
We could do.
You sound like you have other plans.
Or we could play a game.
Okay, I like games.
Cool. So, this was something I decided to do to look up. There's a traditional Russian party game.
Okay. What?
Called Let's All Go to the Ball. Right.
Let's all go to the ball.
It's like a Russian, yeah. It's like a Russian kind of parlor game.
Right.
You know.
Is that the game that the Russian Pat were playing in this game when they were honeypotting around the breakdown?
Good joke. So, the idea is, you know, it's like a ball in Cinderella, you know.
Right.
Like that kind of ball.
Okay. Yeah.
So the idea of the game is going to pass down through generations of Russians and so on.
Right.
Is that you're, at the start of the game, there'll be one player, which will be me in this case,
sure,
who receives the invitation to the ball to give to the other players.
Right. Okay.
The game begins with a short rhyme in which the speaker tells the other players that a case containing several hundred rubles, which, you know, the currency at the time,
right,
and a note has been delivered. The note invites players to the ball and contains instructions on what to do and what not to do. What not to do, what not to say, what colours not to wear. The speaker
right.
gets up to make these instructions. The speaker, which again is me, then asks each player a series of questions about their plans for the ball, all designed to trick players into saying one of the forbidden words or doing one of the forbidden things.
This is somehow more confusing than the quiz we did with Nick Heath.
Okay, basically, right, if it was this version with the ball, right, I would say, you know, so the example it gives here, that you'd say, a lady has arrived and brought a case. In the case, there is money in the sum of 100 rubles and a note. You're instructed not to laugh, not to pout, not to say yes or no, not to wear black or white. Will you go to the ball? Right? And then you'd say, I will go to the ball. And then I'd run through like, okay, at the ball, what do you wear to the ball? You know, and if you say black, anything that's black or white, etc. And you've got to try and get through the ball, the dance, the occasion, without doing any of the things that are banned at the ball. Right?
Okay.
And normally it'd be whichever player...
And you have a list of the things that are banned? Or
yeah, something. Like I give you the list at the start. Yeah.
Okay, okay.
And normally the idea would be you've got to get to the whoever lasts the longest at the ball wins.
Okay.
Okay, without doing any of the things that are banned.
Okay.
Let's
try. Give this a go.
I've changed this to, will you go to the mall?
Oh, that's good.
So, I'm going to give you a list of things you cannot do or you cannot say.
Okay.
You are currently, you're starting with a line out, your throw on the 22. You've got to try and score a try.
Mm-hmm.
If you get turned over, or you do any of those things that I list, you lose.
Right.
Okay. So, for some recon, you're playing as a pretty good team. Your Ireland, let's say, in this game.
Okay.
Your opposition are pretty shit, but they have one really good line-out jumper.
All right, okay.
Okay, okay. That's like that's the basis intro, okay?
Okay.
So, a hooker has arrived and thrown it in. In the case, there are the prospect of 7 points and a note.
Right.
You're instructed not to latch, not to kick, and not to say front, tail, forward, or back. Okay?
Okay, okay.
And you may not say yes, no, or ben vola vola. Okay?
Okay.
So you can't call it the front or tail, but you can't use those words. You can't say forward or back, you can't say yes or no, and you can't say ben vola vola.
Okay, okay.
Okay. Will you go to the mall?
Yeah.
You just lost.
Oh, shit.
You just lost! That didn't take long.
This game is terrible. So...
I've just listed the words. So you can't say the words yes, no, forward,
right,
or back.
Okay, okay.
You can't say front or tail. You're not
How
allowed
do I
to
answer
kick.
The question?
Okay.
Do I
well,
just
you've got
go
to, you've got to come up with a way to answer the question.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. So will you go to the mall?
My man would jump at 6.
Okay. Nice. Nicely done. The opposition jump in the middle that you miss there. They miss it. Cool. Okay. Do you want to form a mall?
I wish to propel my team towards the try line.
Do you want to form a mall?
You're
allowed to say the word mall. You're allowed to say, I'd like
I
to form a mall.
I wish to mall. Yeah.
Cool. No, you're allowed to say mall. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, didn't notice.
Oh, yeah, benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
Do you want to commit truck and trailer?
I do not wish to be turned over via penalty.
Okay. That you get a slight drive on. You get a bit of a drive on, okay?
Cool.
The referee says stopped once. Do you use it?
I wish to continue mauling.
You continue pushing. You continue getting further. You're up to about 15 metres away from the try line.
15.
The referee says use it twice. Use it. That says twice, use it. Do you use it?
The scrum half will break... Oh, hang on, which touchline are we on?
Oh, left.
On the left-hand touchline. So my scrum half will break off to the right-hand side. Mm-hmm. My inside centre will be running a short line off him with the winger running out the back. However,
you're getting too carried away with this.
I hit the inside centre rather than the winger or a nondescript Fijian fly half who's playing for Ireland at the back. So I hit the 12 on a short ball.
Okay, that's it. Does your 12 crash it up?
My 12 aims for a gap, but he's pretty good on the crash ball, so sure.
He is met pretty much on the gain line, 15
okay.
metres out.
Uh-huh.
Do you spread it wide?
What's the score?
6-3.
How long's it been played?
About 20 minutes.
Who's winning?
You.
Okay, about 20 minutes.
You soften them up, you know, is that kind of...
All right, yeah, yeah. No. I wish to bring my forwards around to the right-hand side and keep playing via them. So keep playing
Do you
them.
Pick and go?
No. Oh, fuck.
Oh.
I nearly got away with that as well.
You use the word forward as well. You said you bring your forward around to the left-hand side.
Oh, yeah. Bring my pack.
Yeah. You lost twice and I missed it both times.
I missed three times. I said yes earlier and you didn't notice.
I noticed after you kind of winced.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at this game.
Me neither.
I had a bunch of questions lined up. Just things like, do you pass to your number 8 to crash it up? Yeah. And then I say, no, your number isn't the mall. You pass it forward, you idiot. You lose.
It's weird to think we effectively just role-played an attack in the 22.
Yeah. I was considering, like, do I just run this as, like, a Dungeons & Dragons thing?
That's effectively what it was. And is it weird that I weirdly enjoyed that?
I know what you mean, yeah.
Like, you were making up a defence for me. You invented a gain line. Yeah. And I believed it. I wanted to fight for the inches beyond that gain line.
Do you want to know the ways you could have scored?
Okay.
If you'd kept it in the mall 3 times beyond, you know, being the referee.
Oh, the
penalty wouldn't have come. The referee would have driven over eventually. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You didn't have the balls to penalise me for not using it the second time.
Yeah.
Ah.
Then, if I asked you if you wanted to pick and go, if you said I'd want to pick and go 8 times, you'd have scored. Would have taken you 8 phases. And then you had options about spreading it wide. Does your fly half pass?
Okay.
Eventually, the 13 goes himself. Their opposition winger will fall for the dummy.
Okay.
He'd score. The winger we put into touch.
Okay.
If you just thrown it to the middle, if you thrown it to the middle, you would have been turned over right away and lost.
Okay. Why did I enjoy that?
I know. Maybe you're going to need to, like, maybe I need to start DMing.
I was
going to
say, can we just get guests on and just play this with
like
them?
A rugby Dungeons and Dragons? Yeah.
Oh,
like,
man.
You need to roll to see how good your tackle is.
Yeah, exactly.
There's genuinely maybe a game in this.
Yeah. Like, roll for how many men you can commit to the mall.
Like, I adapted what is a pretty stupid parlor game into, like, rugby Dungeons and Dragons.
I've never played Dungeons and Dragons and have no intention of doing so. However, that was really good.
Yeah. I've done it once. It didn't, you know, it was a whole thing.
Yeah,
it was like
a
really overcomplicated.
Did the referee ever tell you to use it twice in that game?
No, it was really gutting. There was no mentions of Ben Volavola.
No,
just like
no
that
Craig Joubert present in Dungeons & Dragons.
Should we talk about the game?
Can do.
Cool.
I was going to talk about the first try, which scored by Fergus McFadden.
Yes, so I remember this try exactly, like every beat of it, except in my head it was scored by Keith Earls.
You see, no, I remember this try for a very specific reason. So I would have been 14 years old and watched this game, and we'd gotten up previously to watch the Fiji Samoa game, which was on at about 3 a.m. in UK time. So this game was on immediately afterwards. So by this point, it was probably about 5-6 a.m. I think it might have been on a school day as well. I'm not sure. I'll look this up later. But I was very sleepy, and I'd had a nap at some point for a couple of minutes during this game already, and I was half awake as Ron Nagara was cross-kicking the ball to Fergus McFadden. So that's what happens, sorry. Ireland get a free kick from the scrum. Boss feeds Ogara, who does this nice cross-kick which goes about 10 metres forward and perfectly sets up McFadden to slide onto it and score.
He takes it really well.
Yeah, like, he does.
He kind of falls onto his knees and slides on his side to regather it.
It's really, really nice. But I can remember me in my sleepy state. I remember I sort of woke up to watch to see the replay, and I said, "It's a good try, but I think that passes a bit forward." Not realizing he A, kicked it, B, yes, it was forward by about 10-15 yards. Of course, the referee would notice that. It's got two touch judges and a TMO.
You'd have thought that, but on Keith Hills' other try, because Keith Hills, didn't score this try. Andrew Trimble throws it about 5 metres forward.
Yeah.
And somehow he gets away with it. But it's before TMOs could step in on forward passes.
Sure. So they just looked at the grounding and were like, well, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Anything else for me? Yeah. Sean O'Brien scores a try where he just kills a few people on the way.
Yeah, he just runs straight through.
Yeah. But it's a really boring try.
Because we're kind of, you know, we're just over a year into Sean O'Brien's Ireland career.
Yeah.
And this was kind of the first time we saw the Sean O'Brien that was playing for Leinster at the time.
Yeah, and playing at seven, importantly, as well.
He played a very different role for Ireland in the games he played up until this point.
Sure.
So it was the first time we got to see him properly carrying and going mad and doing things like he did with that really easy try.
Yeah, Yeah. Isaac Boss likewise scores a try against the post. Mm. Isaac Boss was playing. How weird is that?
I know. Yeah.
Scrum half of the scrum cap.
His entire family came down. He had like an extended family of like 12 people came down. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because they all lived on a farm quite nearby.
I was going
to say. So I assume they brought like cows and sheep down. like there were people just sat on the grass at this game.
Really?
Like, because there was, this is going to be like one of the last World Cup games this will ever happen.
Yeah.
Where there were people just sat on the grass behind because they only had the stands on the two sides. So you could pay your money and just go and, instead of standing on a terrace, you could just go and sit on the grass behind.
Oh,
like
wow.
You would for like, you know, watching a local league team.
Yeah. Yeah, except it's the literal World Cup.
Yeah, like you're watching.
As good as it gets.
You're watching quarter finalists play.
Yeah. Like for all we know, Brian O'Driscoll could have played in this game.
Yeah,
and you just turn up.
I mean, you're watching Ronan O'Gara, the really pacey fly half with 115 caps.
It's very, very quick.
Yeah.
Earl scores another fairly boring try. Where it's very similar to the one you described in the Dungeons and Dragons scenario, where they spread it wide and the winner drifts off, and he just very easily steps through.
Yeah.
I call it boring. It's a really nice try. Just, you know, give us some more, man.
It's gutting, isn't it? It's really, really quite sad. He does score a second try as well.
That's the one I was on about.
Oh, right.
The first one was the Trimble one.
Fine, yeah. No, but he takes a nice offload. You know, it's
good rugby.
Good rugby.
No, I'm just very hard to please.
Yeah. Rob Carney's try, right.
That was nice.
So I remember as this happened, as he put the ball down, like just watching it back today, thinking to myself, I really need to remember this try because that was very nice and I feel like I'm going to forget it. And I have. I remember how he put the ball down.
Yeah, no, they just spread it wide and Heaslip gave this really nice take and give.
Yeah.
And they'd had this nice breakout from about halfway beforehand. And I think Carney was playing on the wing by this point. Jordan Murphy had come on at fullback. When in the previous USA game, they played the other way around.
Yeah.
But I think they wanted to give Murphy a few more minutes at 15 because he was underused in this World Cup, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Very good player, obviously.
Should we just bomb through the other tries then?
Yeah,
the other
Ireland
tries.
Sure.
So we've covered most of them. Shane Jennings, I thought had a fantastic effort.
He did.
Like, really impressive when he comes on.
Made a name for himself.
Consistently, you know, he turns the ball over a couple of times. Which is, you know, not difficult against this Russia team.
No, of course,
but
still.
Also, they had a habit of just flooding 20 men into a breakdown like it's the 70s. Like, every four was hitting breakdowns. Yeah, and he kind of, you know, consistently was just bouncing people off. And he kind of does that on the way to the, is it called the try line?
I think something like that. The goal line, the try line, the, home base,
but then
something like that.
He goes to home base.
Yeah.
He just goes to home base, picks up, you know, a few bits for his garden.
Yeah.
And then heads home. And in the last minute, right, Tony Buckley, who had had an utterly shite game, barrels some people over and scores a try because he is the biggest man alive.
Yeah, he's the heaviest man in this Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
That Simon Ward was keen to point out.
He is a big, big man.
Yeah.
And yet he is consistently getting destroyed by Russia's scrum.
Yeah.
So the first like two or three scrums, Ireland are on top and Ireland have a pretty good nudge on and Buckley's doing his job, right? And then pretty much from there on out, after a few scrums, I think he's knackered. And he ends up shifting across to Loosehead. Because, of course, you know, back in 22-man squad, so there wasn't two props on the bench. So one of the props had to play the full 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Unless you were Tonga, of course.
Yes.
So Tony Buckley moves
Russia,
up to Loosehead.
They put two props on the bench. It's weird. Russia went for... It's weird. You would say a 5-7 split. No, whatever. because they didn't put back row on the bench. Except they did because Sidorov plays back row and centre. So, anyway, carrying your point.
Yeah, but Buckley then moves over, having been shunted about in Tighthead. He then moves over to Loosehead and he gets shunted far further. And suddenly Russia are driving them off the ball, like their own ball a couple of times. And I don't, like, it's like, I always think with, or used to think with Ofer Tuingafase when he was under-20s. Like, I thought he was one of the worst under-20s players I've ever seen. And he's obviously gone on to become, you know, a very good, solid all-back player. Like, he's good now. But because he was getting destroyed by everyone he came up against, despite being the biggest player on the pitch every single time, like, he was really overdeveloped for his age. And Tony Buckley's a bit like that, because he's massive.
Yeah.
But there's no technique whatsoever. He's just a big lot, like, a big wedge.
It's weird, because there were times where Ireland would just turn over Russia just cleanly against the head. But you question whether how much of that's down to the hooker. I don't know about scrums.
Yeah.
But there were times, and as we were saying earlier, there's this period of sort of 15 minutes or so where Russia are just milking penalties out of Ireland at will. And a lot of them are at the breakdown, but a lot of them are at scrum time, even before the balls come in.
You think about how the Italian scrum completely destroyed Russia in the previous game.
Yeah. Very true.
Like, yeah. It
was nothing like that.
It was the I think it was the most demolition-y performance at the scrum for this World Cup.
Yeah, so Italy and Russia, yeah. For sure.
And do you want to hear a great quote?
South Africa, Fiji's the other one.
Oh, yeah. Of course it was. Yeah, no, that was
sorry,
big.
Go on, give me a quote.
So, do you know who Russia's scrum coach was in this World Cup?
Who was it?
Darren Morris.
Oh, wow.
Former Wales, Cardiff Blues, everyone else.
Barbarians.
Front row forward. Darren
Lions?
Morris.
Lions? Did he play for the Lions?
He did, actually. He did. Yeah. He did, yeah. He played for the Lions. 2001. Won one test cap. Mm. Darren Morris was one of the last breed of properly fat props.
Yes.
You know. Like, he was of that breed of just really big lads who could bend over and push.
Yeah.
And he was mostly fat, not muscle.
No, yeah, yeah.
But he made a career out of it.
All credit
to him. He was a very solid.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So he was Russia's scrum coach for this World Cup. He was asked how he thought they performed at the scrum against Italy. And he said, "It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be."
But you mean Castro only played the last 20 minutes?
Yeah. They got blown off the ball constantly on both sides of the put-in.
Yeah.
But I think they maybe won one scrum.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they won one scrum penalty.
Yeah, I think they did. Like,
and he kind of went, yeah, like,
"Oh, that was all right.
Yeah.
That was all right.
Good, give me a pay rise." Yeah. So yeah, that's the standards Russia were pushing for.
Sure,
in this World Cup.
Sure. So I think this has gone pretty well by those standards.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly picked it up from here.
Yeah, I say today's game, it was 9 years ago, but still. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sure. Yeah, let's talk about Russia.
Let's talk about Russia. So we'll talk about tries, why don't we? I mean, first and foremost, they're capped in today because there is no caution off starting for them. So they have captaining them instead the one and only Alexander Yanyushkin.
Yes.
The 5'4" scrum half who is simultaneously a child and a dad.
Because he's got such an old face.
He does, yeah.
Like, he looks like a different face has been dropped onto his body. Yeah. It doesn't belong at
all.
He's
like a muscular 7-year-old.
Yeah. The Kiwi guy from the start that I mentioned who didn't know about anything.
Sure.
He probably knows a lot about other things, you know. He didn't know anything about Ireland or Russia as rugby teams.
Sure.
I'm sure he knows loads about jam. You know, I'm sure his film podcast talks about this game occasionally because he learned up about it.
Yeah.
So he, when first introducing Russia, says Russia are, of course, captained by the third shortest man in the tournament, one of the shortest men in the tournament, Alexander Yanyushkin. I can't remember how he pronounced it. He mispronounced it.
Yeah.
It's fine. Whatever. Two
men are shorter than him.
But this is the thing. He then, when he comes to introducing the teams and the lineups, he then says Alexander Yanyushkin, the shortest man in the World Cup.
Oh, okay. So two people,
I don't know if he got it wrong,
who were shorter than him have been
got shot
subsequently.
Someone shot Fumi Tanaka in those 10 minutes. Like, that's our window.
Fumi Tanaka's son was playing, he'd been called up, and then he'd subsequently been injured. And
have you ever seen
out?
The really adorable footage of Fumi Tanaka and his wife, or his partner?
No.
There's really adorable footage of them eating breakfast when he was at the Highlanders.
Oh, man.
And because they're
is this Mrs. a unit by any chance?
No, she's about the same size. She looks really normal. And the two of them are just sat eating breakfast, and it's like for a total rugby bit. And he's just being really polite. And on his calendar, he's got like rugby dates jotted down. He's got like a Japan rugby calendar.
It'd be nice to marry Fumi Tanaka, wouldn't
I know,
it?
Yeah.
Should we do it sometime?
Oh, man, I might. Yeah. I've been tempted for a long
time.
I'll
give it a go.
Yeah. I love Fumi Tanaka.
Yeah.
A lot.
He's a geezer.
Yeah.
You know, that guy.
And like, he was eating his breakfast chopsticks in New Zealand, which awful. Awful, everything
absolutely.
About Fumi Tanaka.
So,
Yanyushkin, though. Yeah.
Yeah, Yanyushkin, from this first try, he picks the ball up from the base and does this very clearly improvised switch with Artemyev, who manages to get past Jamie Heaslip and does this lovely step on Rob Carney, where it's not quite an ankle breaker, but it's enough to make Carney look kind of stupid.
He does it so quickly.
With so much balance as well. And he sprints the line and no one can get near him.
Because like, he doesn't have the time to stop and adjust for someone covering in the space Carney is.
Yeah, but he doesn't need to.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because he's going at full flight the whole time. And I say, like, he's so quick once he gets going, Artemyev. And none of the Irish cover were anywhere near. And, you know, like, they're like Keith Earls, who's famous for his cover tackles, you know. And like, there's a lot of very good defenders in the Irish back line who just were nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Once Artemyev gets going, he is lethal.
And it's weird to me that I always forget Artemyev wasn't the captain.
Yeah.
He's now, to me, just always been the Russia captain.
That's what was weird about, you know, Korshnov not playing and them giving it to Yanyushkin.
Yeah.
Obviously, Yanyushkin, I think he captained the Sevens team quite a lot, Yanyushkin, so I think that does make sense on one hand. But Artem, yeah, it feels weird that they hadn't uncovered the gem that is him as a leader at this point. That there's still a couple of years of glazing him, you know, ready to be the captain. So, yeah, it's great seeing his development, isn't it?
Yeah, he also didn't have the moustache.
Yeah, he looks like a baby, doesn't he?
I know, it just doesn't look right. You know, there's something slightly wrong about Artem Yev without the armband and the moustache.
Yeah, oh man.
God, I don't know, do they actually do the armband in rugby at all? Like, it's not a thing, is it? But people still say the captain's armband.
I don't think they do it at all.
No. I've never checked that. I'm pretty sure they don't. I've never seen one.
They definitely don't.
But it still comes up. Yeah, I know that. It was a rhetorical question.
Sure.
like, I know they don't.
Did they ever do it? Yeah.
Sure. Right, okay, that's thrown me off completely.
Anyway, so Artem Yev scores that try, and then Ireland get back.
Actually, there's an interesting thing about the switch itself.
Yeah.
Because it's the only time Russia play like that.
Yeah.
Because generally, their structure is, the fly half is really flat, all of the backs are stood in a different country. And they then have to run up from, like, say Russia have an attack, we're going to do this, like, Russia are in the situation you were in that game, okay?
Okay.
Russia would have their 10 stood quite flat to the game line, like, on the 22-metre line, you know, because you start on the 15-metre line when the ball comes out. All of Russia's backs would be stood on the halfway line and would have the longest run-up possible and then would kind of just, like, fold onto the ball the moment they hit the defensive line. It's not an effective strategy.
No, no. Hence why I was trying to go with the forwards.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Even though I wasn't playing with Russia.
So I think there's almost something ingenious about the fact that they've been doing this, like, to lull Ireland into a false sense of security.
Sure.
And then they do a switch on the gain line. And actually, it works, because sometimes it's a good idea to do things close to a defender rather than giving them, like, 30 yards to wait to tackle you.
It's also one of those passes where Yanushkin slightly misreads the line that Artemyev's running.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to give him a normal pass rather than a switch pass. But I think it is partially down to both of their experience playing sevens.
Yeah.
Because, like, in sevens, a switch pass is much more like a normal pass rather than, like, a normal lift for a switch that, to be used to, this is going to be lost on a lot of people. But, and so Artemyev knows how to readjust and take that ball.
Yeah.
And it's one of those passes that's sort of, it's caught between the line that Yanushkin thinks Artemyev's running and the one he actually does.
Yeah.
And Artemyev manages to catch the ball slightly awkwardly, but doesn't break stride at all.
No, it's impressive. Everything about it shows what a good player Vasily Artemyev is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And likewise, another fantastic finish from Denis Oblakevich down the other end.
And they scored both those tries consecutively, it's worth saying.
Yeah.
Ireland didn't get another one in between them. And so that was a good, you know, that was a good 10 minutes or so where Ireland didn't get a score, which
and
was very impressive.
The full game, guy we haven't mentioned, Vladimir Ostrushko.
Yes.
He has a great game.
Yeah,
I think he's the standout player for Russia for me.
Yeah, agreed. Because there's that one point where Ogara goes to this speculative, but I guess it's a complete 50-50 ball to Trimble, where it goes cross-field, and Ostrushko plucks it out of the air just on the edge of the 22, so he could have called the mark, but chooses not to, and he gambles, and he manages to go a good 50 metres.
Yeah,
he's chased down.
It's funny, like, he's midway through there, but he stops, puts all the money in the world on him making a line break.
And overcomes the newest member of the Martian anti-betting tribe, Donnacher O'Callaghan, of all people, who managed to chase him down, who had a really good game, was hauled off by about 55 minutes, which I did have him down in man-of-the-match contention, but I think he was pulled off slightly too early, so I'm not going to give it to him. But we'll come on to that.
He's pulled off because they've got, you know, another big game.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's the right call to, obviously, because they were safe home and dry by that point. But, yeah, we'll come on to that later, I suppose. But Ostrushko has a couple of really lovely runs, including one leading up to this, their first chance where Greshev ends up carrying the ball and they end up losing it after getting a penalty. But this one in particular, where they'd set up a backline movement. I think originally Ostrushko doesn't quite hit the line he's supposed to, and he doesn't quite straighten up, but he then really adjusts to that and commits to not straightening up and manages to take, I think it's Earls on the outside, and set up this... It's not a very good pass, but it finds his target in Simplikevich.
Yeah.
And the entire Irish team come across trying to tackle Simplikevich into touch, and he manages to step around them and carry them with him.
Yeah, because he steps, and he should go into touch. Like, he should be, you know, like Rico Ioane the other week, when he just put his foot in the touchline.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like he has, but he doesn't.
No, yeah.
He then stays in field. He then has basically the entire Irish backline just jump on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And he's carrying, like, one on each of his six shoulders, seemingly.
Yes.
As he somehow managed to stay in sheer leg drive and sheer just upper body strength as well to ride these tackles.
Yeah.
And ground it in the corner. You know, 20-year-old, or he might have even been 19.
I think he was 19.
Yeah.
My gut tells me he's 19. Yeah. And bear in mind as well, this is his test debut
Yeah.
playing against Ireland, you know, a very good team.
Yeah.
You know, make the quarterfinals. And this is his test debut. And at this point, obviously, everyone's saying, you know, he's definitely a man for the future. And you see how good a finisher that is, that is. And he really has gone to have a very good career, you know, mostly in sevens.
Yeah.
But he's been a really strong player for Russia in both codes.
So by the end of this World Cup, he, for certain, had offers from four top 14 clubs.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
It was Brive and, like, some other clubs. That I think there was someone bigger as well.
Yeah.
But Brive was, like, the one who were throwing the most at him. They were desperate for him. Back when they were, you know, like a reasonably big deal club.
Sure.
Yeah, but there were, might have been Cast and someone else, you know. There are at least four top 14 clubs, and there are probably Premiership clubs interest him as well. And he turned them all down to stay and play in Russia, you know, because he wanted to stay near his family and so on.
Respect.
You know, yeah, and because he was on a full-time deal as a rugby player in Russia, it wasn't like he was, you know, keeping up with a day job or having to do something else on the side.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, he could have been a real force.
Yeah.
And it's something you hear, like, Jimeno talked about it when he signed for the Highlanders the other week. And it happens quite often when you see Tier 2 players go over that they want to represent their country, you know, and kind of make a big statement that actually we are good enough to play.
Yeah.
And there's something more than just your career on the line, you know. And there could have been something in the fact that he would have been presumably the second Russian player to play in the Champions Cup.
Yeah.
Or the Heineken Cup as it was at the time. And, but you know, we've gone on to everyone that Steve Diamond signed. And has now seen that video I made.
Yeah. That's the thing, it does have a knock-on effect, though. There's sort of players representing the country. Like, you know, you've come across a lot of, you know, like David Kupriashvili was probably the first of the Georgian front rower tribe who've gone over. And that's led to players like Aprasidze and Lobsanidze.
There's now something like 48 Georgian front rowers playing in two French leagues.
It's insane.
Yeah. And things like that, like Chauncey O'Toole was signed by the Ospreys, right? Didn't go particularly well, but he'd had some good games for Canada. You know, there was like a lot of hype around him as a young flanker.
Yeah.
He frankly, I think a large part of him signing for the Ospreys was down to the fact that there'd been a lot of good Canadians playing for the Wales, the Welsh teams in the late 90s and early noughties.
Sure,
you know, you'd had the Rod Snows and,
And the likes.
So on, Gareth Reese.
Thank you.
You know, and so they take a chance on a Canadian. And then, you know, eventually these to Tyler Argon and Jeff Hassler both signed the Ospreys at the same time.
Phil Mack with the Ospreys. Yeah. Didn't actually play in the end, did he?
Yeah. But I do think there's something subconscious in that, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And seeing more Fijians and more Tongans come over and play well has helped them a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a shame not really seeing that kick on, the amount of Russians playing in the sort of very top
flight. With Steve Diamond, yeah.
Yeah, other than with Steve Diamond. Yeah, the very top flight. Because you've got, like, Morozov playing. He's at Sale, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But there's not that many I guess Ostrakov as well, but also Sale. So.
And again, like, what Claremont wanted to bring Taya Gajev in as a medical joker.
Oh, right.
But he was offered, like a three-month deal with the potential he'll then sign on beyond that.
Yeah.
And he turned it down because he said, I want a full-time contract, you know.
Fair enough.
So he took a full-time deal in Russia.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there must have been other clubs that were interested in him.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that no one signed him.
Yeah.
You know. And I get it. A lot of it, there's a huge language barrier with Russia as well, to anywhere you want to go.
Culture barrier, frankly. Yeah.
And it's not like a lot of the, you read a lot of interviews with, I do anyway, a lot of Georgian props.
Yeah.
And like the one with Becca Gigashvili the other day, where he said when he signed for Toulon, was it Toulon he went to first? I think it was another club in France he went to before
I'm
Toulon.
I'm not sure who Chinicharvi's at Toulon.
Yeah, he's at Toulon at the minute. No.
Right.
But I can't remember if Toulon was the first French club he played for.
Right.
But he said when he signed, he didn't have a word of French or English.
Yeah.
And it was often the case that coaches would shout at him in French and they'd try and translate it into English in case he spoke that better.
Right.
And he said he didn't speak either. Apparently he didn't watch a rugby game until he was 20.
Wow.
And he took the game up quite late, but he was a really good and accomplished wrestler.
Yeah, yeah.
So he just was able to translate it over quite quickly and quite easily.
Wow. That's very impressive.
But yeah, he decided to sign for Toulon because he had a few offers from different French clubs. And he signed for Toulon because Mubu Gogodze played for there.
Oh, wow.
And he was just like, he knew Gogodze because he's like a proper household name.
Mikatadze played there, didn't he? So, wow.
Yeah.
That's very impressive. Yeah, and I guess Kubriashvili and Chilichava as well are two examples. They've had some good Georgian players too long, haven't they?
Yeah, I know.
Fair play.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, that's probably...
They've also had Bryce Heem.
Basically.
Who licked all of the Georgians in the face.
Yeah. Basically, Toulon or Zebra, sign Ramil Gysin.
Yes.
And Chad Plato.
And Douglas Raouf, the Brazilian scrum half.
Yeah, your friend.
Who is incredible. I love him. He's a very good scrum half, but he also looks a bit like a cross between a soul singer and Borat.
Enough said, I think.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to touch upon before we go into our closing segment?
At one point, Simon Ward calls Mike Ross Mike Ford.
Wow.
Yep, and he just doesn't correct himself. There's a great bit where Ireland have an overlap. Leo Cullen gets the ball, and he has absolutely no interest in passing it. Does a little pirouette and tries to drive himself. It's like the complete opposite of him as a coach, where he's so precision and so passing focused, and all the forwards need to be able to pass accurately. Yeah. Like, he's just like, I don't care, I'm a second row. I don't care about that. Have I got anything else?
I've got one more
all?
Thing.
Oh, no, I have got one other thing. Go on. I've got one other thing. But I sort of want to make it like... It's almost a reason for Man of the Match in itself. It's also Leo Cullen. I don't know if you picked up on this.
Right, okay.
So at one point, Ireland are close to the Russian line. They did that a few times.
Yeah.
Do you pick and go or do you just... No. And one of the Russian scrum caps comes off. Leo Cullen spots this from a few metres away. Leo Cullen stood in as like an extra pod receiver or something. Or let's clear out. He spots the scrum cap lying on the floor. And he steps out of formation and he begins his run up. As though he's taking a kick at goal. And frankly, I think it's the best shot at goal we saw all game. Leo Cullen begins his run-up and he properly swings his leg like Johnny Bloody Wilkinson and, like, hoofs it. He clears, like Reese Hodge, boots the scrum cap way beyond the Russian line and it goes, like, into the dead ball area from him just taking a run-up and hoofing the ball as far... the scrum cap as far as he can.
That is some Vance Rates tier shithousery there.
Yep, it's like a precursor to Rates.
Yeah.
He then, you know, obviously... He doesn't go back into formation. He then goes into the ruck as though that was his plan. As though, like, no, I wasn't just doing it for the shithousery. Like, I was going into the ruck anyway. I was going to help clear it out.
Fair play. Well done, Leo Cullen. I've one more thing as well. That Denis Antonov, the Russian second row forward... doesn't wear a gum shield.
Oh, yeah, I noticed this as well. Yeah, I've got this jot down. Yeah.
And he has several teeth missing.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, he doesn't have a gum shield or teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has, like, a couple of... he has just enough teeth that you notice he's not wearing a gum shield.
Yes.
Like, because, you know, if he had none, you'd maybe think, oh, is that a coloured gum shield? Like what Liam Williams has or whatever. But no, he just lacks teeth. And I think we know why. It's because he doesn't wear a gum shield.
And yet plays second row.
Yeah.
In the Russian division. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he would have clocked a few, you know. Mm. Yeah.
Well, so, he's regularly playing against Georgia and Romania.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, of course you're losing teeth.
Yeah, exactly. So, if he signed for the Pro Dud, then he would have negative amounts of teeth by now. But his bottom layer of teeth are just about held together. But his top layer is pretty much non-existent.
Right, should we do this? Should we do Dick of the Day, Man of the Match?
Yeah, let's.
Cool, okay.
Start Man of the Match, I reckon.
Start Man of the Match.
Do you want to go first?
Sure. Gives me no pleasure to say this, because... Not the biggest fan of him, but Jamie Heaslip.
Okay, fair enough.
Jamie Heaslip, I thought was very, very good.
Yeah. Should we get him on the podcast?
I think
or should we go on his podcast?
I think he's allergic to podcasts.
Okay, yeah. Go on, talk to me about Jamie Heaslip.
I thought he was very good. I thought he carried very well. I thought, he actually used his pace as he stopped doing a few years later down the line. It began to disappear and he just stopped sprinting. And he actually passed, which was nice.
Yeah. Mostly forward, but he passed.
Sure, yeah. At no point did he ask any stupid polls on Twitter. At no point did he kind of ramble on. And at no point did he throw a hissy fit when he was dropped by the Lions and stopped turning up to training.
Sure, sure.
He doesn't run a restaurant either in this.
No, that's true. Not in this specific game. At no point does he serve any food.
No.
Or any of that.
He co-owns with the Carney brothers.
Yeah, he doesn't ask somebody to bring his phone onto from the sidelines so he can tweet about podcasts. During this game.
He doesn't start any polls.
No.
Yeah. He does all the things that I liked about Jamie Heaslip and none of the things I didn't.
No, that's fair enough. That's a very good shout. And I think he wasn't very much in the running for me, but I instead opted for Sean O'Brien for very similar reasons. Like, he was working his socks off. This was back in the day where you could have your seven just run around the park rather than stand in a specific place.
Yeah.
And so he lapped that up and did loads of that. Again, Donnacho O'Callaghan chased everything and ran around the park like a headless chicken, but in a good way, which Sean O'Brien also did. So, yeah, mainly for his carrying, and I guess some really good turnovers, Sean O'Brien's my man of the match.
Cool, okay. Should we do the Vashkov Award for Dick of the Day?
Oh, well, I will let you know that about a quarter of my notes are dedicated to the list of the Dick of the Day.
So. I had quite a few contenders. Like, there's a few things that happened early on when I went, oh, there's my dick of the day. There you go. And then things would just be thrown up over and over again.
Sure. So, do you want to go through yours, or should I go through my list?
No, you can start. You can start.
Should I go through my list?
You can start. We can take it in turns.
Okay. So, the first player on my list, let me just get my quill out as I tick off everything on my list. So, the first
You're John
on my
quill.
List.
No, he isn't playing. It's not good.
No.
Not good. He wouldn't play for like another 6 years.
Yeah. In a different country.
Yeah.
The first on my list is Konstantin Rashkov for his not very good kick and that professional foul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should I keep going on my list?
Please.
Sure. So, the second is Fergus McFadden for doing an ant finger, by which I mean, that could mean many things.
Yes.
But he did a forward pass which went into touch.
Yes, so he did.
Yeah, yeah. Very similar to ant finger against Ireland, ironically. So maybe he took inspiration from him. Then I have Garbazov for his professional foul, which resulted in a try. There's so many things that Garbazov goes guilty of there. And as well, Craig Joubert for not sending him off. Have I named your dick of the day there?
No.
Is your dick of the day a certain Irish winger?
Or go on.
Does it involve... Okay. So there is an incident towards the end of the first half.
Right.
Do you know where this is going?
I don't think I do.
Okay. So Ireland are in the Russian 22.
Mm-hmm.
Ronan O'Gara carries the ball in. And Denis Antonov is the player who makes the tackle. Mm-hmm. O'Gara's going for the try line at this point. You know, he's between the posts. He's about 5 yards out from the try line, if that. Antonov tackles him and pins him to the floor. Ireland are recycling the ball, ready to start picking and going. Am I allowed to talk about picking and going? Yeah. Ireland start picking and going.
Mm-hmm.
And Antonov is still pinning Ronan O'Gara to the floor. I can't believe you didn't see this. No, O'Gara starts trying to wriggle free, start fighting back.
Mm-hmm.
Antonov, like, puts his hand somewhere in Ronan O'Gara's face.
Nice.
And really keeps him down and starts really trying to wind him up.
He Duncan McRae's.
Yeah, a little bit. Not quite as vigorous, but yeah.
At which he shows point, restraint.
Yeah, he's being a massive nuisance. At which point, Andrew Trimble walks over and sees what's happening. Craig Joubert starts shouting at Antonov, let him go. But I think he only does it once, actually. Mm-hmm. Trimble walks over and is doing anything he can to get Antonov off O'Gara and just can't shift him whatsoever. So Antonov is there, crawling all over O'Gara.
Yeah.
He has him. He's ready to start smacking him for no reason. And Trimble's there going, no, get off him. Antonov cannot feel it. And so Trimble manages to remove Antonov's scrum cap because he's trying that hard to remove the player that he takes his scrum cap off instead and thinks, oh no, I don't want this. I want his head, not his scrum cap. And then...
At which point, Leo Cullen runs in.
Yeah. He still can't get him off. So Trimble has to walk round, and it's a pretty leisurely walk.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Joubert started telling Trimble not to get involved 2 or 3 times at this point, and then says, no, get off him, to Antonov, who's still lying on O'Gara.
Yeah.
This has lasted about 15, 20 seconds at this point. And then Trimble grabs Antonov's boots. I don't know if he's trying to remove it or drag him.
That's desperation, isn't it?
Yeah. He drags his boot and then just starts dragging him. Antonov is still on O'Gara. He's dragging both of them with him until eventually Antonov lets go. And Joubert kind of goes, no, that's a penalty.
It's like, ironic, isn't it? Because they go take him by the legs, so he can't go anywhere without his legs.
Yeah.
I know,
yeah.
Actually, he's going somewhere with his legs.
Yeah.
He's taking O'Gara with him.
He's getting dragged away. And this is just before Isaac Boss scores, by the way. So it's quite easy to pinpoint. Again, I might attach a video of this somewhere because it's really funny. But yeah, he managed to drag him off. And then O'Gara just kind of gets up like, what the hell was that all about? And Trimble's kind of thinking like, did I just win a fight against the second row? Like, no, you definitely didn't. It took you a long time to get around that. And then Antonov goes back and tries to commit a technical foul by slapping the ball out of Isaac Boss's hands because he clearly thinks he's going to the bin anyway. But yeah.
I love that, doubling down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Joubert does give penalty advantage, but Ireland score anyway. But Antonov was being a massive dick, and Trimble just did not know how to deal with it. So my dick of the day for being such a winger is Andrew Trimble.
I'm completely on board with that.
Yeah.
I want to double up and give that, but I didn't notice it.
Yeah. And say I'll attach the video somewhere.
But here's the thing. I had lots of examples in which, like, okay, Garbazov and Rashkov could both be dick of the day for the most blatant two offences of the World Cup. But I want to give Garbazov man of the match for it.
Okay.
Like, I love it. You know,
you've given you man of the match, haven't you?
I considered it. You know, I thought about it very deeply. Very, very deeply. Three cheers for Andrei Gerzhov. However, I had a few other contenders. There's Artem Fadikov, the other Russian flanker.
Okay.
Twice just steps over the ruck when, you know, there's a ruck properly formed. He steps over it and tackles the scrum half before he can pick the ball up. Twice. And clearly it was just his thing. You know, he just went like, this is what I do. This is what I like doing.
You can get away with it in the Russian leagues. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, like only once the referee picks up on it. So once he gets pinged and Ireland kicked for the corner, the other time just nothing happens. Like, no one does anything. Like, he just kind of shoves Isaac Boss over. Boss kind of falls over, kind of turns the referee like, what are you going to do about it? And he's just like, get on with it. You know, which I enjoyed. I was all for that. And then Keith Earls just generally...
sure.
Andrew Trimble as well, for some reason, annoyed me, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was.
Now you know.
And now I know there's that.
It's being a massive winger all game.
Yeah. And Leo Cullen I had as well for not passing and for the head guard thing, which again is a man of the match nomination more than anything. Like, it's great, great shithousery. However, my dick of the day for being the biggest man alive and yet made to look like Andrew Trimble was Tony Buckley.
Okay. That's
was Tony Buckley for contributing nothing but getting battered around the park.
And then having the audacity to score.
Yeah, but like Sergei Popov, the Russian loosehead. Right, I don't know if you saw any of their team photos for Russia.
No.
But they all look like someone shoved a pencil up their bum as they're taking the photo. Like, all of them are pulling these, like, oh, faces. And like, Sergei Popov, and like, he doesn't look like this generally, but in his photo he looks like a lesbian school teacher in the 1980s. Like, it's incredible that guy is then battering Tony Buckley, this enormous, enormous man who's played like 200 games of professional rugby. Yeah, so Tony Buckley is my dick of the day.
That's fair enough. That's a few worthy nominations. I mean, there's a lot more dicks than men in this game, clearly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fair play. We've done well there.
Fantastic. Okay, so, unless you have any other business...
I don't believe I do.
Cool. That brings us through the latest episode of the finest film podcast to talk about... the Rugby World Cup match in 2011 between Ireland and Russia, which finished 62-12.
I do, in fact, have one thing I'd like to say.
Okay.
Is that I would like to thank... I can't remember your name, but somebody on Twitter sent me a picture of Deacon Marnie with his stat sheet photoshopped onto Love Actually, which I think was very much appreciated. And one other person who I think was joking said something about writing Deacon Marnie fan fiction. So if you get round to that, it is encouraged.
Please write Deacon Marnie fan fiction. Yeah, just say post it in a review, send it wherever, but please send it to Israel Folau.
Yes.
He will really, really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's really into the idea of someone having sex with a stat sheet.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And also, you know, speaking of engagement, I would just like to thank everybody who, from several episodes ago, contributed to the chain of tweets from Chad Plato.
Yes! We got so close, didn't we?
Yeah.
We signed for Zebra.
Yeah, we got to like 21 tweets out of 25.
Yeah.
So Zebra have not given him a contract as of yet.
Yeah.
It's not too late.
There were a few people, though, that just replied to him rather than joining the chain.
Yeah,
it doesn't count.
Like, no. That doesn't count.
I appreciate everything, but it doesn't
count. I don't. It's not fucking good enough.
No. You need to join the chain. Come on. If you're listening and you saw it, you thought it was good, whatever. We need Chad Plato to sign for Zebra.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is like a big
we
deal.
We do appreciate your efforts, genuinely. But, I mean, look, Chad isn't getting that deal, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to stick it on the end of that chain. And it's not too late, you know? You're not getting judged by the 20-odd people who will be tagged in the tweet. No,
we're all here. We all appreciate it. We all want this for Chad Plato.
Yeah, we all want that notification to come up with a full stop.
Yeah. We all want one day to see the greatest possible... signing news. You know, we want to see Planet Rugby or wherever report on Namibia wing Chad Plato, statistically the best player at the last World Cup.
Yeah.
Signs for Zebra.
At Plato Chad on Twitter.
Please. And just join on his one tweet. I hope people listen to that previous episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the episode with Sam Lana on it where we talk about Tonga Japan.
Tonga Japan,
reference.
Speaking of that game, though, that is not the next game. The next game. Next time will be no, it's a proper banger. Like, it is one of the games of the tournament. It is Scotland against Argentina.
I will add, just to build a bit of hype for this episode, this next game is the reason why we started this podcast.
We were
discussing this particular episode, this particular match, when we decided we'll go ahead with this podcast because we love, like, it's such a good game.
Yeah, and I haven't rewatched it since it happened.
Oh, really? I think I have once.
Rewatched the last 15 minutes.
Yeah,
and okay. I haven't rewatched the game in full.
We'll come on to this when we have, because we have potentially a guest on with us as
fingers
well.
Fingers crossed.
But yeah, we'll come on to that then. But this is a really good, and like, if you're going to pick out a couple of games in the pool stage to watch, this is definitely one of them.
Yeah, yeah, it's a proper dramatic World Cup game.
Yeah,
because it is a winner takes all decider of who gets out of that group.
Yeah,
you know, it's good as winner qualifies and plays the All Blacks in the quarters and gets knocked out.
Sure, sure. Okay,
so I'd like to say thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah,
thank you to everyone. Except Mark Kermode
and
his lawyers.
Does Mark Kermode have more lawyers than us?
No, he doesn't. He's only got like two.
Oh, really? Yeah. So we could have him if he doesn't mention Ireland versus Russia in the next one.
Legally,
he has to now.
The thing is, like, most of our lawyers, like, currently working with Carly Rae Jepsen on the lawsuit that we can't talk about.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I shouldn't mention that.
It's a big deal. We can't talk about it. It's fine. No, it's fine. We can't.
That's like
we just can't.
16 of the 18 lawyers. We've only got two sat with us now.
Yeah, we can't do that right
now.
It's not really feasible. Hence why I've just taken the order. The training order is fine. Okay, right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. And we'll see you next time for Los Pumas against Los Thistle. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.